Greetings, everyone, and welcome to Tales from the Bar. I'm really happy you're here to start your weekend off right. I'm your host, Jen Noga, and today we're joined by Daniel, George, and Stefan from the band The Sublets. Grab your favorite drink, sit back, and enjoy your time at the bar with only a few technical snafus this time.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Tales from the Bar. We're doing an in-person one, so I'm very excited. I'm here with The Sublets. You guys can introduce yourselves.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. I'm Stefan.
I'm Daniel.
I'm George.
Cool. So I start off all my interviews with like a couple icebreaker questions. And I've asked this question to, hello, George.
Hey, George.
That is George the cat.
Hey, buddy.
Yo.
He's just gonna.
Cool.
Do you want a mic, man? All right, cool.
You want to speak your truth? He's like, nah. Because, like, I've done this before. So I've asked this question to literally every single person I've ever interviewed. Very easy question. What is your favorite 90s bop?
90s bop?
Yeah.
What do you mean by, what's that mean?
What's like that?
Favorite song from the 90s.
Favorite song from the 90s?
Lord have mercy.
Wow.
Basket Case by Green Day.
It's
my favorite song. Period. So that's kind of a, yeah.
From the 90s. Wow. I mean, that's like, there's so much great music in the 90s.
Future Beat Machine by Meshuggah.
Why is it easy for you guys? From the 90s. Wow.
He's like writhing over here.
Because I don't even know.
That's a pretty loaded question, though.
But everything I'm going to ask you in comparison is going to be really, really easy.
That's cool.
So,
yeah.
Get the hard stuff out of the way.
Oh, right on.
Man.
He just wants to come back to you.
I don't have an answer. There's one from the whole decade.
Yeah. You can list a couple if you want.
Oh, man.
I'll also take late 80s, early 2000s.
Mm. That just makes it harder now.
Yeah, no, don't expand the search. I don't know. When did Voodoo come out? The D'Angelo.
Oh, man, was that...
Was that 90s?
That might have been early... I don't know.
In the 2000s?
Can we Google that
real
quick?
Just go with it. No, don't even Google it. Just go with it. That's the answer.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that whole record.
The whole record.
If it came out in the 90s. If not, we're going to cut this and edit it.
No, it's on record.
It's
forever.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll edit all this stuff out.
I'm going to look while you guys talk.
Okay.
Perfect.
So my other icebreaker question is, because we are having drinks, what is your favorite drink to get at a bar?
An IPA, I would say. Yeah.
Daniel, do you want to...
It came out in 2000.
But you know what? That probably means it was recorded in 99.
Oh, totally.
So I think that's... Because it wasn't released in 2000, you know.
All right, anyway... Favorite drink? Oh, that's not fair because I currently don't drink, so it's hard at bars. I've been trying NAs a lot, and they're not good. I mean, I guess, I don't know, Red Bull.
Red Bull?
Probably. Although I'm not allowed to drink those, so don't tell my wife.
It's okay. I'm not allowed to drink those either, so don't tell my cardiologist.
So normally I would say vodka, but after last night, I don't want to think about vodka. But no, I... Give me a cherry vodka, shot of cherry, shot of vanilla vodka with like a Diet Coke, and it just goes down way too easy. That's my favorite.
Mine is a Dirty Shirley.
Oh,
what's
heck
a,
yeah.
What the heck is a Dirty Shirley?
It's a Shirley Temple with vodka in it.
Oh.
So my it's very dangerous because my theory is it's kind of like coffee. If you can't taste like the alcohol, then, you know, you're doing something right. I can have like four or five of them. It's fine.
No, you
no
can't.
No alcohol in it.
Right. Yeah.
Try the cherry vanilla Diet Coke thing.
Okay.
Or Sprite or whatever, or, you know, ginger ale or whatever you want to put it with.
Right now I'm drinking very fancy lemonade from Hyman's.
Ooh.
It's dragon fruit.
Dragon fruit lemonade.
Yeah.
Fancy pants.
I know. I recently discovered it, and now I'm, like, obsessed with it. Hopefully, you know, if you hear my neighbor just weed whacking his yard, we're just adding to the ambiance.
Yeah, absolutely.
The garage ambiance.
It's great.
You guys just released a cover for this big like compilation album, I think.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
What
we did.
How did that come about? Like how do you get on a compilation album?
There was a thing on Instagram where they were like, "Hey, we're doing this you know, they're doing it for a good cause. They're doing it to help fight against human trafficking. And they're like, we want to do a compilation. It's an AC/DC compilation. You know, are there any bands out there who'd want to, you know, be on this thing? And Cleveland Versus is it has some ties with some really good local Cleveland bands. And it's a, like I said, it's a great, you know, great idea to whenever you can get art behind some sort of message or something that's bigger than just, you know, the music itself. I always feel like that's just an awesome, you know, thing for the world. So yeah, so when we saw it, we were like, heck yeah, let's throw our name in the hat and your name in the ring, hat in the ring, name in the, whatever. Let's try it.
I'm following.
And yeah, and that was it. We messaged them. We said, hey, we'd love to do it. They told us, like, you know, you can go to this page and see what songs are you know, people have claimed and whatever. And we, Highway to Hell is a song that I grew up with. Like, I just remember playing, like, my brother's playing it and stuff and listening to it a bunch. And I was like, man, like, nobody's taken this song yet. Let's do it. And that was it. So we, you know, very grateful to be on that compilation. There's a lot of really great local talent in Cleveland in general, but even on, like, on this compilation, there's just a lot of great bands. So yeah, we were really stoked to be on it.
Yeah, I recognize, like, almost everybody that I follow that was, like, local was like, we're on this compilation album, and I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet because I've been, you know, just, I had a double ear infection.
Oh! Yeah.
And then, who had COVID?
I did.
Both of them.
Both of them?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sorry. So, luckily the double ear infection happened at the same time, so it was good, but... they were like, yeah, just be careful because my eardrum could rupture. It's ruptured before. So they were like, just try not to wear, like, headphones or listen to loud music. And I was like, an AC/DC cover album is probably not the vibe.
Not doable right now.
No.
So say a movie producer comes up to you guys and they're like, hey, we're going to make a movie based on your last 5 releases. What type of movie is it?
Well, I mean, it would be a hopeful release, but it would definitely be like
a romantic comedy.
I would say there'd be heartbreak. There'd be there'd be heartbreak. There'd be drinking. There'd be more heartbreak. But there'd be a lot of hope. Like there would be the idea that tomorrow's a new day and it's going to be brighter, and there's still a lot of great people and things in the world.
Who would you want in your movie?
Zendaya.
Okay, yeah. That was really quick, and I appreciate it.
I feel like I didn't even finish answering the question.
I didn't even process the question at all. I don't care. Like, I want her in there.
I mean, there's a lot of other great people. I'd love to see, like, Ryan Reynolds in it. And, you know, there's a bunch of other fun people that I'd love to see. But in Zendaya, hands down.
Jack Nicholson. I don't know.
There's going to be a car chase for sure, right?
get Vin Diesel just driving his car. It's like Fast and Furious.
I guess, there would have to be some sort of fast cars in a movie about us. I've got 2 sons, and we were thinking about naming one of them Carson. And one of our friends was like, your last name is Chase. We're like, yeah. They're like, what are people going to call Carson for short? I don't know, car? So Car Chase. You're going to name your kid Car Chase.
That's kind of badass.
Like, I kind of
love it. People would say
I mean,
Car,
it's a lot cooler than my name.
Bridge was like, no, we're not doing that.
They'd probably say son.
And so then his name became Christopher.
That's my dad's name. You have the same name as my cat, and your son has the same name as my dad.
That's funny. I'm going to have a daughter in 2 weeks, so I'll name her Jen, and then we'll just
perfect.
Round it all out.
Perfect. Congratulations, by the way.
Hey, thanks. Yeah, we're super excited.
As my dad says, cherish the time because then they grow up to be this.
Yeah, I hope that my daughter's half as cool as you.
Oh.
Podcasts in the garage, and I don't know. I think it's awesome, so.
Yeah, we had this whole spot cleaned out, and then my dad and my brother went to camp because they work at a summer camp, and then they came back, and they just tossed it all right here. And I was like, so it defeats the point of the curtain, but the curtain adds a little bit of ambiance because there's more crap behind it. So.
Cool. Great.
What is your favorite song to perform live, and what is the story behind that song, if you feel comfortable sharing it?
Favorite song to perform live is probably in this band, right? We're talking in the context of this band. Probably Fallout for me. It's just a fun song. It's got a little bass thing at the end that's fun. Sometimes I get ooze from the crowd. Sometimes, not always.
Yeah, you do.
But my fingers are always very, it's the last song of the set, so I'm always the most tired at that point. So it can be tragic. There's always a risk that the train could derail at any moment.
That's a tough one. Maybe All or Nothing.
Really?
Because there's just so many cool moments in the song. Just the way the song flows, it's just really fun to play.
Cool.
But there's some...
I knew you liked that one. I didn't think that was your favorite.
Fallback has that really awesome bridge section, which is unique, and it's just fun to play. I don't know.
I'd probably say the Fallout as well. I kind of feel like because it's at the end of the set, it's the one we close with.
That one is super awesome, too.
It lets you be a little more reckless with it. It's also just an awesome high-energy tune, but, like, you know, for the rest of the set, I'm trying to protect my voice a little bit, or I'm trying to, you know, make sure my guitar doesn't go out of tune or whatever. But by the last song, I'm like, nope, I'm beating the shit out of my strings, and I am just screaming, and I'm going to, like, give this thing. And then I don't care if I have a voice at the end of it. And it's just a great tune. I mean, so it was actually written by a dude named Britton Roberts. And Britton, he was in the band for a while, and... We ultimately, at one point, we were a five-piece, and we just kind of sounded a little too pretty. Like, we were doing these beautiful harmonies, and it was sounded so big and full and all this other stuff, but we kind of looked at each other, and we're like, we feel like we're like a wedding cover band playing rock music instead of, like, an actual rock and roll band. And so we stripped it back down to just being a three-piece, and, like, let's start here again, and let's, you know, kind of get back to basics.
Let's play faster.
Yeah, we played mm-hmm. stuff faster. We took stuff, you know, changed some keys around, changed some parts around. But Britton wrote The Fallout like 10 years ago or something, or 15 years ago. And he wrote it, it was like the first time I ever met Britton. I was talking about the Sublets, and he was like, I don't even know if we had a name at that point, but I was talking about this band. And he's like, oh, man, he's like, I got this, like, kind of pop rock, pop punk tune that I think you could, you know, it'd be cool for you to hear. And so he played me a demo of The Fallout, and I fell in love. I'm like, this song is amazing. I'm like, I would love to do it, but I never thought that I could sing it. He did some really cool, like, I don't know, stuff with his voice that my voice just doesn't do. And he was, like, singing it so, I don't know, just so badass. And so finally when I started kind of just singing along and trying to learn, you know, I had to change some of the deliveries and do some things different with some of the words. But then it started fitting, and I was like, oh, no, now this is, I love it. And then once we parted ways with Britton, we still worked out an agreement so that we could still use the song in the Sublets, and I'm super grateful. Britton's an amazing songwriter. We do a couple of his songs. All or Nothing is a Britton tune.
Yeah.
There's a couple others that are like
Wish You Nothing,
Lover
Nothing.
Well, Lover's the big one that I was thinking, but he does a lot of cool stuff in his songs and writes really, really catchy hooks, and it's awesome. So we're grateful to have the song, and it is just so much fun to play.
So do you guys have any like influences towards your music? Like, it could be like a person or like an event or just like other musical influences that like influence how you write or how you perform.
I don't know, like coming into this project, there were already so many, like Britton had songs and George had songs. I kind of just play my role as a drummer and just coming in and learning all this stuff and just putting my influence on it as far as playing in a punk rock band, and I've played in punk rock bands before, so I don't know, it's kind of seamless just to come in, but like, I really don't do so much as far as like lyrics or anything like that. or melodies or anything like that. So I just kind of play my role as a drummer and fill that spot.
But even like on stage, what, who do you like pretend that you are, or who, like, who are your big influences when you're on stage with the Sublettes?
Influences, oof. Myself, maybe?
That's a great answer.
Yeah, because that's just what it is. It comes from, like, working with you guys. And it's just myself. I don't really think of, especially in the Sublettes, I don't think of any other players that I'm trying to emulate or anything like that.
I think, for me, it's probably, like, because unless there's, like, a song that I'm just, like, totally into at the moment and it's got me, like, pumped and wanting to play, which usually is not the case, that there's a particular inspirational song or artist, but like just the chasing that high of like, awesome. if you play on stage, or I guess any, but we'll put it in the context of music. If you're on stage and there's a crowd that's really into what you're doing, like a big crowd or even just a crowd that's into it, and it sounds good to you on stage and to them, and you're vibing with the band, that's like a drug. When you feel what it's like to be a performer and you become addicted to that, you're chasing that feeling every time you know you got a gig coming up. You know what I mean? You're thinking you want it to be like the one that was the awesome one. Like, and you never know what's going to happen at a show. Really, you don't. I mean, like if you get an opening slot for a really big artist that you know there's going to be a lot of people there that are pumped to see music, and you can kind of guess this is going to be an awesome show. But for the most part, when you're doing like a local thing or like a weekday show, for instance, or whatever, it's a crapshoot. You don't know, is there going to be a lot of people there? Are the people there going to care what we're doing? You know, we're playing original music, so that's a risk when you're playing in front of people that's never heard you before. You don't know how, you're not really in control of how they're going to perceive your songs and music. So you're hoping, you're hoping all the stars are aligning, and that's what motivate you more. Me, if I'm answering the question correctly, like, I think it's that you're chasing that buzz.
I'm feeling
you're chasing that.
That,
yeah, you know what I mean, though?
Yeah.
So that's motivating. Yeah, and like, then when you do start your set and you're like, oh crap, they're like, people are into it. This is vibing. Just that moment is inspiring. But I mean, like, everything that gets you to that point has inspired you to like be all the artists and the music stuff leads you up to that point. But like, motivation to keep doing it and like to do it again and everything. I'm chasing that high.
How are you going to follow that?
I can guess it's Zendaya. He's motivated by Zendaya. Like,
this is all just a long game. I want to get famous so I can just hang out with Zendaya. That's it.
Man, I miss her music career. She dropped like one single and I still listen to it all the time. Replay.
On Zendaya.
It's weird for me to write and to have influences. I'm all over the place. Like, there's times where I'm writing a song and I'm writing it to myself, and I'm like, I don't care who else hears it or whatever. Like, I need to hear this right now, so I'm going to write the song to myself. Or like, I'm writing the song to me, you know, 10 years ago or something. Then there's other times that I'm writing songs that I'm like, I feel like the world needs to hear this, or I feel like, you know, there's so much negativity. Maybe we can, you know, pick people up by singing about this or whatever. But then I write stuff that's, you know, sometimes it's singer-songwriter stuff. Sometimes it's country. Sometimes it's, you know, punk. And every time it really depends on what, like, how I'm feeling in that moment. And I'll tell you, man, Daniel hit it on the head. I love the high of performing, whether it's, you know, like I'm an award-winning magician. So doing magic for like a small group of people who are like really into it, and, you know, like, because it's, people often think that performing is this, hey, look at me, look how great I am. But it's not. It's this communal thing where it's like, hey, look how great we are. Like, yeah, maybe I can do magic tricks, but I'm, like, if these 10 people aren't here, like, I'm just playing with myself. Like, that's not fun.
No, I mean, it is, actually.
It can be fun. But
you ain't doing it right.
But so the idea of, like,
making it, and that's what we really strive with sublet shows too, is we don't want people to feel like we're on stage and therefore we think we're better than you. We want people to be like, no, they're on stage and we're all rallying around this together to make this moment in time where we are all sharing this energy. So, chasing the high is huge. It's a big part of the reason why I love playing live and being up there. And it's something that I think unless you really, like, there's people who I know who are like afraid of public speaking and afraid. And I'm like, no, I don't care. Put me on stage. Let me be up there. I want that. I love those big moments. But I also just know that, you know, part of it also is like when I'm writing about heartbreak, I'm writing it because I'm like, I'm feeling this way. I think other people are feeling this way or have felt this way. And for me, it's like this therapy where it's like, if I tell everybody, like, I have a broken heart and I can connect with you on it, then all of a sudden we have a deeper connection and we're like, I feel like that's validating. So the high is there. Validation is huge for me.
So you guys have opened for some pretty big names. I know that you guys did, there was a 3-day, I forget who it was, at the Grog Shop.
Amberlynn,
because I had Truss on here, and they also opened for Amberlynn.
Yep.
And then you guys, I saw you guys at House of Blues. Mm-hmm. Is House of Blues the biggest place that you guys have ever played?
I mean, House of Blues was definitely the biggest crowd we performed to. I think, I'm trying to think if we've played, quote unquote, bigger venues, but with just smaller crowds.
Big old empty rooms.
Yeah. The bowling alley. I don't know. You know,
yeah, West Side Bowl.
West Side Bowl was pretty cool.
That was a great play. That was my first time there. It was amazing. But yeah, it was like a random Wednesday, and it was pretty dead. But it was great. I mean, again, the bands we played with Dive Bombs and Ben DeHaan, and it was a really good show. But unfortunately, a lot of people just didn't want to drive the hour and a half out there. Again, on a random Wednesday, but yeah, I'm pretty sure House of Blues was probably our biggest. It's definitely, I mean, like I said, it was definitely the most people that we played, that this iteration of the band has played in front of. I'm sure you guys in your other careers and me in my past life have played probably some bigger venues, but
for sure,
House of Blues, as far as the sublets go in the last 5 years, was House of Blues is the biggest.
So how did you guys get that? Because I know it was part of the gathering, which is, I went to the gathering, and that was insane. I was the youngest person there. I found that out. Then within the last couple hours, I was asking, and I saw the people from 107.3, who I'm really big fans of. So that was I was like, oh my God. But I asked them how old they were, and they're in their mid-20s, and I was like, oh. I was like, I'm 23, so I'm the youngest person here. But it's fine. So how did you guys end up getting that gig?
So we reached out to them. We didn't reach out to them as the sublets. We reached out to them as I started a label. It's a very, very small indie label. And I mean, we've got ourselves, we've got my acoustic projects, we've got our friend Shayla. And right now that's it. And we aren't really looking at signing a bunch of people. Like, I don't want this to be a big label. I wanted this to kind of be a vehicle for us and for the people that, you know, we work with to kind of be able to put out some good music, and have a little bit more, credence to what we're doing and just makes it sound, I don't know, if you're signed to a label, all of a sudden people kind of talk with you a little differently. We reached out to The Gathering as the label, and we were like, hey, we have a lot of close friends who are in different recordings, they've got different recording studios. We've got a lot of different, got our hands in a lot of different things with some video stuff and a whole bunch of other stuff. And so we reached out to The Gathering and we're like, hey, you guys are going to be in our backyard. Is there anything that we can do? Any way that Jestertainment, that's the name of the label, any way that Jestertainment can work with you guys or anything that you need? And we started talking to them about it, and they're like, oh, what do you guys do? And we told them, we're a label, and we've got some bands, and we just sent them some links and didn't really think anything of it. And they were like, oh, the sublets are really good. Would they want to be part of this? Would they want to, represent Cleveland and be one of the opening bands of something? And We're like, sure, yeah, that sounds great. And, you know, we worked out some more details and stuff, but they were like, yeah, you guys could perform, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, and blah, 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 and they gave us all the details and stuff. And House of Blues, you know, they did Rock Hall on Wednesday, they did Beachland Ballroom on Thursday, and then House of Blues on Friday. And they're like, you know, it could be a really big show. It could be really cool to have you guys open at House of Blues. And to me, that was, I had never played House of Blues. And I was like, let's do it. I, you know, like we played Beachland. We know that, you know, that scene really well. Never played the Rock Hall, but it also kind of felt like the opening night. I don't know. There's just something about House of Blues that kind of felt like it was a good fit for what we were doing. And then when we started kind of looking at who the other bands were on that bill, it really kind of re-solidified that like, oh no, that's the right night. That's a lot of bands that are kind of in the same wheelhouse as us, that alternative indie sound. And that was it. They liked what we did, and we kind of talked with them about some other stuff, because the gathering is put on by a company called Amplify. And Amplify does a bunch of like different marketing and other stuff for radio stations and a whole bunch of other stuff. So we haven't officially done an agreement with them, but we're still in talks with them that, you know, could be cool to, you know, once the sublets get a couple more tunes out, to shop some of the stuff around and try to get some more airplay and that kind of stuff. But yeah, they dug us, and it started because we just reached out as our label, not even as the band. And it ended up being an absolutely amazing experience.
It was an insane experience, definitely, because I also reached out to them because I wanted to go see Coin, who is the headliner for that show. Mm-hmm. And I emailed Nikki, and she was like, well, we don't have any tickets. And then I was like, oh, okay, like, I'll just reach out to people that are putting it on, and I'll just, you know, I'll see whatever. And they were like, you can come to the whole thing if you'd like for free. And I was like,
wow.
Okay. So I'm like, okay. So I found out about it on a Saturday. I emailed them on Saturday. I heard back from them on Sunday. And then I was like scrambling to find like a hotel room, and like, cause I have like food allergies and stuff like that. So then I was trying to figure out like food accommodations and all that other stuff. But it was like a whirlwind. Mm. But be glad that you were not at the Beachland show, cause that was...
I've heard.
Yeah.
I've heard.
So would you guys like to play a little game?
I would love to.
Okay.
I don't know.
So this, I'm going to give you guys some statements. It's basically who's most likely to do this. You can mm-hmm. contest it. But we're just going to see.
Okay.
See where this goes. This could break up the band. It could not break up the band.
Oh, snap.
You know.
Hold on. Would you do
that? Yeah, I got you. What are you trying to do, Jen?
So who is most likely to get you lost on the way to a gig?
To get lost? I think me.
Probably Daniel.
Yeah, probably.
Are you directionally challenged or?
Yeah.
My mom, even if my mom has the GPS, she'll always pad an extra 15 minutes to like get lost. Even if she has the GPS on, because she's like, I will get lost. Mm-hmm. But she also speeds, so... You know, driving on the highway is really fun, especially if like she's speeding and then Bon Jovi comes on and she'll just zoom. Yeah. And I'm like, I'd like to make it to my destination in one piece, please. So far, she hasn't killed me, but she's tried.
No.
So, you know, typical mom things.
Yeah, I think her and I would be really fun to drive together.
Are you a speed demon?
Oh my god.
Yes. What is the hell?
Hence the car chase scene from our movie.
Yeah, so I'm not. It creeps up. We'll go for a drive sometime and you can tell me.
Okay.
I have gone fast before. But I don't think. I mean, I haven't gotten a speeding ticket, and oh my gosh. I've only gotten one speeding ticket in my life, and that was like 15 years ago or so.
That's kind of shocking.
So.
I don't know if you guys had to take the roundabout to get here, because there's a roundabout down over there.
No, I came from that way.
So my friend Julia, when she takes the roundabout, she's like, 15 miles per hour is merely a suggestion. And she'll just zoom.
Wow.
And my friend Caden, who comes with me to a lot of festivals and gigs and stuff like that, he's from New York. So he drives like a New Yorker.
Go, go, go.
Yep.
See, I'm
like, I'm pretty conservative on side streets. You know, I don't want to hit a kid or something, whatever.
But it's too easy.
You put me on the freeway, and it's game over.
Mm-hmm. I am a... Well, I don't have my driver's license, but I have driven before, and I'm a pretty good driver. But my brother is getting his driver's license, like, within the next, like, 2 weeks. So he's also a good driver. But when I was learning to drive, he was a lot younger. I think he was, like, 12 or 13. And he would sit in the back seat in the fetal position and just scream the entire time I was driving.
Oh, wow.
Like, and I was going the speed limit. Like, it was fine. So now when he drives, I'm like, how fast are you going? Like, are you going too fast?
He's got to get in the back seat and get in the fetal position.
And start screaming.
There you go.
I'm a good big sister, so because he'll most likely be the one driving me around, so I gotta be nice.
Well played. Yep.
It's all about the long con.
Oh yeah.
So once he gets his driver's license, then I will start the screaming. Who is most likely to forget something important at home?
Probably you.
Damn. It's me. It's for sure me.
Yeah,
it'll be me.
I'm kind of OCD with stuff, so.
You're like hat, wallet, keys, phone.
I do the checklist
lock on
too.
The doors and...
I went to Wonderstruck and I was like, okay, I packed my bag. Like, I've double checked everything. I have all my camera equipment. Like, I have my gear and everything. And we get to breakfast and I was like, we don't have the parking pass. It's like somebody had to come back home. I didn't even print it. I totally forgot about it. Like, I bought it, but I didn't even print it, so then we had to turn around and come back. I know, but we were still early, so because Caden drives fast. So
yeah, I think I'm the most likely to convince myself that I've forgotten something, even though I probably haven't, but I'll convince myself.
And then I'm like, what if I forgot to put something on the checklist?
Almost every gig, now that I think about it, wow. Almost every gig I have to pull over to check and see if in my car to see if I've packed something that I've already checked probably 12 times.
When I was at Mayhall's, I was like, hey, Dad, I was like, I know that the SD card is in this board as we're setting up. And I was like, can you just confirm for me that it is in this board? Because if not, like, it's game over. Because it's like, it's not like I could just plug in my micro, like an SD, like a regular SD card, because it's a micro SD card. So I was like, I don't have one of those on me. So it was very nerve-wracking, but it was in there and it worked. And it didn't have any issues, unlike one of the times that I was recording over Zoom with Cousin Simple. And it was just like, I didn't even realize it until we stopped recording that the card was like, it's corrupted. I was like, but that's why we double record on Zoom and on the board.
All right.
Who is most likely to actually be a bunch of lizards in a trench coat instead of a human?
I think Stefan's probably
the
most likely.
Wait, I'm sorry.
I'm not even sure I understand the question.
So you know how there's like that bit where there's like two toddlers in a trench coat?
Yeah.
Instead of toddlers, it's just a bunch of lizards.
Wow.
I kind of feel like that's me.
Maybe
yeah.
Just because I feel like I'm the most random / out there one. Like,
and you do magic.
Yeah. Like, I
just probably has a lizard on him at some point.
Yeah.
And you play with whips.
That's true. Again, which I don't.
He's an award-winning magician, by the way. I don't know if you caught that.
Yes, a street performer. I often carry my bullwhips with me.
So he's lizard guy.
I busted those out last night.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, I scared the heck out of some people.
In the bar?
No.
Never. George, I've told you so many times, no bullwhips at the bar.
Who is most likely to cry over a movie?
Stefan.
Me. Am I the sappy one?
I was just saying, I cry.
Oh, George, too.
Yeah.
Maybe both of us.
Daniel's most likely to laugh.
I'll be laughing at misfortune of others.
What's like the saddest movie that you've watched recently? Or like something that made you like tear up?
I'll say like,
what's that movie with Will Smith with the...
Men in Black?
No,
Wild
Pursuit of Happiness.
Oh, okay.
At the end when he gets the job and it's like, oh, and he had to struggle through with his son. Like, remember that movie?
I didn't see it, but I'm guessing that.
But I know what you're talking about.
I tear it up. Yeah. I am kind of sappy. It reminds me of Slipknot lyrics, like, I'm not afraid to cry and it's none of your fucking business. You know?
I always joke, I'm like, I haven't cried in years because I had my tear duct surgically removed in 1958. And everyone's like, wow, you look really good for your age. And I was like, thank you.
No, we just watched I just watched the movie. It was like a cheesy rom-com thing. But it got me choked up near the end. I don't remember the name of the movie, though.
That's okay.
I don't know. Anyways.
You know.
We both cried, though.
So. Okay.
Yeah. I'm sure there's just... You didn't... Do you want me to answer, or should I just?
You can answer.
On?
Yeah, go ahead.
On? I'm sure it's happened since then, but I cried in the theater for the Mr. Rogers movie.
I didn't see that.
Ain't that his name?
The one with Tom Hanks.
Yeah, I don't even think it was a sad part of the movie.
You just cried.
I was just crying. Even my wife looked at me like, "Are you crying?"
Maybe I'll change my answer then. Maybe Daniel is most likely to cry.
I cried. I don't know why I cried. It was a good. I think it was good. It might have been really boring. Now that I think about it.
Maybe that's why you were crying.
Maybe.
Like, I want my life back. These last 2 hours.
No, I think it was a good... But whatever. Move on. Moving on.
I've only ever seen one Mr. Rogers episode, and it was the one with Lou Ferrigno, because my brother was, still is obsessed with superheroes, but when he was younger...
That's the Hulk?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
He would take blue and yellow chalk and rub it all over the ground to make green. And then roll in it to be the Hulk. So we watched that episode like religiously. And then we actually met Lou Ferrigno time at Comic-Con.
Yeah, I grew up with a autographed picture of Lou Ferrigno on like the family. It wasn't even in a bedroom. It was like on the
mantle.
Living room.
Like it's displayed prominently.
Yeah, I think he came to... Remember the Autorama, I think? Remember that when they had all like the movie cards and stuff? Mm-hmm. And they'd always have like... A random actor.
I don't remember that. Was that downtown?
Yeah, like they used to have. Shows? You know, they'd always have the auto show, which had the regular cars, but then the Autorama, a couple weeks later, which was all like.
Yeah, I remember that.
The souped up custom cars and the movie cars, the Batmobile, stuff like that.
That's cool. Mm-hmm.
You can find Lou Ferrigno. And then I was like, wow, his biceps are bigger than my head, and he heard me.
Did you ever watch? No, he didn't hear you. He's hard of hearing.
Well, he looked, I said it, and he looked directly at me.
Oh, he read your lips.
And I was like, oops. But also, I was not ashamed of that, because I was like.
That's not a bad thing to say.
No.
Did you watch?
The Lou Ferrigno, yep.
His Incredible Hulk?
Mm-hmm.
Really? Because that's really old.
It was really good, and I love you, man.
Well, she was from, she was. Got her tear ducts removed in
1958. Yeah, so I'm with it. Who is most likely to drop the band and go live in the woods?
Maybe it would be me.
Yeah, I could see that being you.
Yeah, I drop off the map.
Yeah.
So my next one was like, who's most likely to give up their smartphone and go for a flip phone?
Oh, I would totally do that.
You would?
Oh, yeah.
There's no way I could do that.
Like a Nokia?
It took me forever to get, like...
I hate my phone. Honestly, I use it for a lot of stuff right now because I have it. But man, do I hate it. Like, I kept telling myself that I'm like, oh, I'm going to get this new phone so I can take better pictures of, you know, stuff and post it on social media and run the band account and blah, blah, blah.
You want an Android?
And then I, what?
Do you want an Android?
No, I want social media to not be a thing.
That's fair. I am terrible with social media, especially for bar buddies. I'm like, I have all these concert photos that I sit on, and I was horrible. Like, I'm just, it's so much work to like cheat the algorithm and all this other stuff. Like, I have I had to turn off my Instagram notifications because Instagram decided to push one of my reels, and it's at like almost 400,000 views, and like people just keep liking it and liking it, and it got so annoying that I was like, what is happening? I don't understand what's happening. Because, like, on TikTok, I don't do numbers or anything. Like, we get maybe, like, 200 views. But then on Instagram, like, it's, like, 1,000, 6,000. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what is happening?
Dang.
Yeah, my brother didn't get, like, any form of social media until he was, like, 17 or 18. So I was like, I fully commend you. He was like, I don't want to turn out like you, just, like, dependent on social media. And I was like, that's fair. It's hurtful, but it's fair. It's like, you're allowed to be mean. The last one is, who's most likely to write a love song about food?
George, all the way.
Man. Yeah, George. He probably already has written.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. I mean, I love food.
I know. I've heard you say that maybe like a dozen times over the last few years. So.
What's your favorite food?
Sweet and sour chicken.
Interesting.
From with one particular rice. Place or just anywhere?
Yeah. Well, there used to be a place in Broadview Heights called the Great Wall at the corner of Sprague and Broadview. And then they closed one day and I was devastated. But yeah, that was my favorite sweet and sour chicken of all time. But that's like my, like if I was dying tomorrow and I was given one last meal, I'll tell you, man.
You can just have it tomorrow without needing to die.
Oh, I could, I know. But I'm just saying if I had one last meal on this planet, it would be sweet and sour chicken. And then with like a Duncan Hines yellow box cake mix with like a milk chocolate frosting and, yeah, that sounds delicious.
My mom recently put me onto duck sauce, like on top of chicken, because we didn't really eat a lot of Chinese food because my brother also has a lot of food allergies. So she recently was like, hey, it's gluten-free, like everyone can eat it. So she started putting it on like stir fry and like with like some spicy mustard. And I'm like obsessed with it. I was like, you could put this on anything and I will eat it. She's like that with the Dave's Cosmic Subs sauce. Like, you can just buy bottles of that. So we have, like, 5 bottles in our refrigerator right now.
Fun.
And she puts it on everything, as I'm exposing my mom. But she's not here, so it's fine. So I want to talk about Happy Hour Sessions because you guys have, like, a new season coming up where it started.
We have, over the last year, I'll start at the beginning. When live performances shut down, I could really feel myself not connecting with people. And I was like, I'm losing my mind. So I called up some of my friends who are songwriters and just in the music business in general, whether they're engineers or producers or actual songwriters. And I was like, hey, do you want to come over? We'll have some drinks and we'll write a song together and we'll film it and see what happens. And so my buddy came up from Cincinnati. His name's Eric, and we started filming, and it was rough. I mean, there was a lot of, like, you know, figuring things out. I was a horrible host because I talk too damn much. And then especially the more alcohol I have in my system, the more I talk. It was not a good cycle. But we did a thing, and we wrote a song, and we were like, oh, okay, this is kind of cool. And then I did that for a few more times to kind of refine the process. And then started reaching out to people who weren't my friends. That sounds terrible if I say it that way. People I didn't know. And I was like, hey, I'm doing this thing. There's no episodes out yet, but I can send you kind of a trailer, like proof of concept. And it was amazing how many people were like, oh, that sounds awesome. Yeah, I'd love to do it. And I've got it, like, some of the biggest, like, the people that, when I look at the Cleveland industry, music industry, the people that I look up to, as far as, like, the performers and stuff like that, like, I've gotten a bunch of those guys who I just never would have thought that I'd have been able to be in a room with them writing a song. And it's been awesome. And so we just, 3 weeks ago, we released our first episode. We actually released 2 episodes on the same day. And then every Wednesday, we put out a new episode. So we've got 4 episodes out total. And we're going to keep, we've got 17 episodes that are filmed and ready to go. We're just going to keep releasing one each week. But yeah, the basic idea is that you know, and they're all roughly 20 to 30 minutes long. And the idea is that, you know, somebody comes in, we meet, we talk, we have some drinks. We are given a random, essentially a random prompt, but I won't get into how it's formed, but there's a random prompt that's like, okay, this is how we have to start kind of the creative process of writing a song. It's supposed to be our inspiration, or at least some way to kind of be a kicking off point. And then we just talk about it, and I get to know the person, like, how do you write? How do you, you know, how'd you get into music? How do you start with melody first or lyrics first? Or what do you think of when you hear this song, and what is blah, blah, blah. And it's just been a really, really cool experience. Like, as a fan of music, I've loved being part of this. But it's so cool to see how this project has just grown, and it's like, you know, it started off as like this fun, was supposed to be just kind of this fun drinking, you know, like excuse to drink and write music and hang out with my friends, has become like this documentary of capturing, you know, the 4 or 5 hours of writing a song with somebody, it's turned into something pretty beautiful. So
do you have any dream guests that you would
Taylor Swift? Yeah.
Are you big Swiftie?
Zendaya.
Yeah, and clearly, Zendaya.
But
are you Swiftie?
I am. I think she would be amazing. I think her in this, in the environment of sitting down and writing a song together and talking about the songwriting process, she has done this for so long, and she talks about the craft of writing songs a bunch. Like, I just think it'd be so cool to write a song with her. Plus, I think we write in very similar ways, which is, you know, we don't try to get super clever. We don't try to get, there's some songwriters that try to do crazy modulations and key changes and tempo changes and this other stuff. Like, and I sometimes think that really detracts from a song. Not to say there isn't a time and a place for it if the song calls for it and whatever, but like, I just feel like there's people who put it in intentionally because they want to make the song sound more sophisticated. And I just feel like a lot of times that kind of can get in the way of what should be a really good song. And I think Taylor does that. She edits really well and kind of doesn't let herself get, you know, too far into trying to make something super crazy or flashy. And she's just, it's funny because she can write some really on the nose lyrics that are kind of come off kind of cheesy, but she also writes some that are really like, oh, that's a great way to say that. Taylor Swift would kind of be one of my dream guests. Selfishly, I'd love to have like Billy Joe Armstrong on the show. I'd love to have, there's a deer walking through the, a baby deer.
Yes, we have a lot of deer.
And then obviously like, I would love to have like Paul McCartney or, you know, Dave Grohl or whatever. Like, there's some big guy, like big stars that I would look at, and, you know, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame type people who I'd love to, you know, be with and write a song with. But yeah, Taylor Swift is kind of my number one right now. Kesha, I would love to have Kesha.
Kesha would be great.
Yeah.
Is there anybody that you guys want to see on the podcast?
I got to say, so Stefan actually hasn't seen an episode yet.
I have not.
Daniel is one of the hardest people ever to like impress. He's usually like,
you know, so hateful towards everything.
Yeah, he is. Like, he kind of is like, whatever, that's stupid. You know,
you've lost your sense of childlike wonder.
Yeah.
So he watches Happy Hours.
I love it.
They hadn't seen an episode or anything. And he starts watching it and he messages me like with this, like the most sweet message. And I couldn't believe it was actually him sending it. He's like, dude, this is amazing. Like, I think you're onto something here. This is so cool. Like, if Cleveland knew what was good for them, they would be like trying to support this because you got so many great, like, you are showcasing Cleveland talent. Like, it's just amazing. Blah, blah, blah.
And it's a very intimate look into local artists that, like, Cleveland. I just feel like Cleveland's always complaining about like support, like we're always hating on each other. It's like, well, here's your opportunity to like get behind this concept, to like really showcase local artists in a very intimate way, because you're learning about them on a personal level, but you're looking at them and you're learning about their creative layers too, which is really unique. And he's an excellent host. Don't believe him. I don't know when it started off.
I haven't shown the earlier episodes.
Yeah, to be fair, I didn't see much of the process. I saw the first episode the day it dropped, just like from a view, like a normal whatever. And he's an awesome host. So it evolved quickly because he got good. I think he's great. He could be like a Ryan Seacrest.
Yeah.
Seriously, I think he's
got the hair for it too.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, you know, it's so funny. Daniel just said that he didn't, you know, he never saw the episodes prior to them being released. I had to learn that about myself with a lot of creative process. I have a tendency of wanting to tell a lot of people what I'm doing, because I'm like, oh, listen to this thing, this is what we're doing. And like, I love getting input from people. I love brainstorming with a bunch of people. But then it also, you run the risk where like, if people, like if you think you have something special and other people start kind of crapping on it or saying, oh, you should change this, you should do that, and all of a sudden you're left with, well, everybody else hates it, why would I put it out now? And sometimes it's not even that everybody hates it, you just got a couple critiques or a couple things that, you know, you weren't expecting. And so anymore now, like when I'm like writing a song, like I'll bring it to them when it's a little more finished, or I'll, you know, whatever, but I try to not let anybody outside of like our immediate circle hear a song or hear an album or, you know, hear about happy hours. I'm like, nope, let's get it done. Because if like too many times people crap on your ideas and then you don't do it and then you're just left with nothing, you know, and it's like, nope, I need to put my head down, get it out, and it is what it is. If I'm happy with it, then that's all that matters. But it's still really nice when somebody like Daniel, you know, sends that message, and it really, it's such a cool, like, platform for people to, and, you know, we don't want to just stay local Cleveland. I've got some people from New York coming in to film some episodes over the next couple weeks and next few months, actually. Actually, Don't Believe in Ghosts. They were at the
They're gathering. Very nice people.
Yeah.
I met them, it was the second night, and they were talking to my friend Todd, or I should say my dad's friend. I've known Todd since I was conceived, so that's how long I've known Todd. And he was introducing me, but I was so exhausted that, like, my eyes were, like, glazed over. But then I saw them the next night at House of Blues, and they were like, yeah, we can help you with your microeconomics homework. I got a C in the class, so
nice.
I got to tell them that. Thank God.
That's awesome.
Because that was the second time I was taking microeconomics because I failed the first time. Well, so college is hard.
But yeah, they're going to be on the show. They're super sweet.
Wait, you're going to have a whole...
No, just the lead
singer. Okay, gotcha.
Steven. We're going to have him on. And yeah, got a couple other people who are going to be on there. So it's going to be bigger than just Cleveland. But I still... in my mind, I've got a balance where I'm like, okay, I want to have 8 episode seasons, and basically like 4 of them are local Cleveland artists that we're highlighting, or like Northeast Ohio, and then I want to have like 2 of them that are more like regional, like, you know, whether it's Pittsburgh, Detroit, whatever, and then 2 of them that are like big deals, like really, you know, if I can, obviously, like I said, Taylor Swift would be amazing, but even just people who, like, maybe they are artists who had a hit song 10 years ago. There's a lot of one-hit wonders that have put out music in the 90s and early 2000s that I feel like it'd be pretty cool to, like, get a hold of them. So, we'll see what happens.
If only the Wonders were a real band.
Oh, the O'Neaters.
The O'Neaters. I love that movie.
Doing that.
It's a ballad, man. That is one of, like, our family's, like, favorite movies. So, when I was at Wonderstruck last year... Himbry, they're from Kansas City. We were talking, we spent almost our entire, like, allotted time talking about That Thing You Do. And then when I was talking to the Empty Pockets this year, we also spent, like, a lot of time, and they actually played a gig with Wolfman, which was really cool. They're going to be in Kent on the 17th. So I'm very excited to go see them again.
Nice.
But I have one last question for you guys.
Okay.
Do you guys have any advice for people that are just starting out or are afraid to put their stuff out there? Or is there some advice that you guys wish you would have heard when you were first starting?
Yeah, don't be afraid. Just put your best foot forward and do you, you know? Did I need to hear something early on? I don't know. It was just really, cool just seeing people doing it and just... being in music and playing and stuff like that. So, yeah, don't be afraid.
Yeah, I would say learn as much as you can. Like, learn how to record yourself. Learn how to document all your ideas. And learn the internet, whatever that means, because I don't understand it most of the time. But I, like, my generation was pre-internet. So I wish somebody would have warned me, like, whatever you like, shit's about to change. Yeah. So get on board. Like I've always been, like, against TikTok and stuff, like those type of platforms. But if you're gonna succeed now, you got to get on board. You just have to, and don't fight it. Don't try to be a rebel or whatever. I mean, I shouldn't say that because you really shouldn't tell. You shouldn't discourage anybody from going whatever path, but. Learn it and embrace it and use it to your advantage, and don't let other people discourage your creative process. If you know, there's gonna be times when you'll feel silly for like your process or whatever, and people, your friends or not friends, might discourage that, and don't let that happen. Just keep trudging forward and just keep doing it. And as long as you love it, if you end up not loving it, maybe it's not for you, because it is tough and there's going to be a lot of heartache, a lot of disappointment. But if you constantly love it, then don't let anything stand in your way and keep learning.
Yeah, I'd say that the number one thing is obviously just get out there and do it. Put in the work. You know, I a lot of times people look at us or be like, wow, man, you guys are really tight or this or that. And it's flattering, but it's like, you have no idea how much we rehearsed and how, like, we rehearsed a lot together, but also apart. Like, I play a bunch of acoustic gigs at restaurants and other stuff. Most times I don't even advertise, because I'm like, I don't want, like, to me, those are some rehearsal sessions. You know, you go out and play. I've got a buddy who says that he, you know, he works a lot, and he's like, oh, I work really hard at music, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, when's the last time that you went out and you played, like, 3 nights in a row? You know, and like when you play an acoustic gig, you're playing like 3 hours. If you do 2 3-hour gigs, like back to back, you know, like Friday, Saturday, you're pretty beat. Your fingers hurt. You got, you know, your calluses are, I don't care how great your calluses are. I mean, they can still, your hands can still be sore, or your fingers hurt. Your voice can be, you know, and you're in different environments. You know, maybe there's somebody, maybe you're outside and somebody's smoking a cigarette, and all of a sudden you're trying to sing inhaling smoke, and you're like, man, I've never dealt with that before. Or like, you get down there and like what you're dealing with right now, like your cable isn't working, or you know, your microphone breaks, or your whatever. It's like, oh, okay, well, I need to start bringing two, you know, extra mic cables. I need to bring two microphones, and you know, throw in an extra mic stand in the car, and just little things like that that you kind of prepare for. And you can't get there unless you just go out and do it. And just to be clear, it's, you know, my buddy who says he works a lot, he does. He works a lot of stuff. But it was just a really, you know, a question that I kind of, you know, when musicians, a lot of times musicians think that they're working hard on a particular thing, but there's a lot that goes into being a musician and playing out a bunch and really being a successful musician. And I know I fail at a lot of stuff too. So it's like, sometimes I need to look at myself and be like, oh yeah, I'd give that advice to somebody else. Why am I not, you know, adhering to it? But I think the other real big thing is, you know, you've got to set your expectations. I remember the first time I ever played a show, I was 17 or 18. There were dudes setting up right before us or right after us. I don't remember. And they were like in their 30s. And I remember looking at them and thinking in my mind, like, psh, man, if I'm in my 30s and I'm still playing one of these places, like, that's, you know, what did I do wrong? And I just, having this horrible arrogance, thinking that, you know, we were going to be this huge band and blah, blah, blah. And just having no idea, first of all, how hard the music industry is. But secondly, just like, we were not good. I mean, we weren't bad, but we were not good. I don't know where this arrogance came from and why I thought that I deserved to be able to, you know, be heard over the next, you know, year or two. But that was a shame on me. But when we started doing the sublets, and we kind of, I had to take a real hard look at it and be like, you know, we like I said, we were a five piece for a while. We did some other stuff, you know, trying to be more marketable and have more of a commercial sound. But it, in some ways, just wasn't genuine to what we were doing. And we ultimately needed to make the decision that it was like, well, we, and this is pre, like, Tickets for My Downfall, like pre-MGK, pre, like, pop punk didn't come back in a big way yet. So, you know, we're looking at this and like, well, you know, if we're going to put out these songs that have this pop punk, you know, vibe to it, we have to be okay with playing to like five people in a room. And that's it. That might be like the, you know, maybe once in a while we get to play like 20 people. Never, ever thought that we'd be able to like play open for Coin and play House of Blues. Like, that's the dream. I mean, you want to play big shows, but I think once we really kind of set the expectation that we're not doing this to be, you know, the way that we define success today is different than I defined it, you know, as a young musician. Before, I would have said like, oh man, if we're playing arenas, then we made it. We got stuff on the radio and then we made it. And today it's very much like, nope, if each show that we do, we give it our all and we get better with each show and each, you know, and like doing those little things, that now is success. We're going to put stuff out on the internet. We're going to put stuff out on social media. We're going to do all this other stuff. But if people don't like it, that's okay. There's a lot of bands that are really big and famous that I don't like, but a lot of other people do. And, you know, we don't get to control who likes what. We just get to, you know, put out what we think is good music and what we enjoy doing. And if people like it, awesome. If they don't, they don't. But I think getting out there and just going and doing it, you know, and having some realistic expectations and really, you know, checking yourself, I think those would probably be the biggest things that I would tell somebody.
Yeah. Yeah, to tag onto that, be a good person, because you're going to be working. If you're really going to be in the music industry, if you're going to be touring as a band member or whatever, you're going to be on the road with people, and people want to be around people that are nice to be around. Mm-hmm. So don't, you know, the egos and stuff, it looks great on stage, but you're working with people every day. And if, when it comes to opportunities, people remember when you're a good person and you're kind to the people you work with and you don't bring drama and maybe you make them laugh every once in a while, those are good qualities. So do that, because then you'll have people that want to work with you.
Yep.
And that's what you need as an artist, people desiring to be around you.
Well, as they say on the game show Hot Ones, congratulations, you've completed the interview. You can use this camera, and you can tell the people what you have going on. So if there's anything that you would want to plug, now would be the time to do that.
The sublets and happy hour sessions. I mean, that's pretty much it. I mean, there's a lot of other stuff going on. I mean, these guys are in a couple different projects. We've got
Shayla Hope.
So yeah, Shayla's incredible. They play the rhythm section for Shayla. And but yeah, I mean, just, you know, you can go to happyhoursessions.com. You can on all the socials, you know, YouTube, everywhere, you can just type in Happy Hour Sessions and you'll see, you know, what we're doing there. And otherwise, you know, yeah, we're the Sublets, and you can find us pretty much anywhere. Any of the social medias. Like I said, we're going to be taking off about like 5-6 weeks here. While I focus on the family. But then in October, November, we're going to try to get back out there and play some shows again and hopefully release the EP in November. So it's exciting, you know, a lot of fun stuff. But yeah, come find us on the interwebs.
All right. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jen.
Hi, it's Jen again. I want to thank you for listening to this episode. You can find Happy Hour Sessions on www.happyhoursessions.com or on Instagram at Happy Hour Sessions. Keep up with all things The Sublets on Instagram at The Sublets or check the link in the episode description. As for me, you can find Bar Buddies on Instagram at Bar Buddies Pod and tell me who you want to see on the show next. This episode was produced in collaboration with Voltage Live.